You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate
and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world.
And now, innovation thought leader
and your super fly host,
Tamara Kleinberg.
Hey, Launch Streeters, Tamara here, your host and wannabe yogi. If only I could touch the floor. All right. Every now and again, I come across a business that takes something complex and makes it simple. I don't mean dumbs it down. I mean strips away the unnecessary complexity to bring to market something that is simple and easy for customers. Believe it or not, there is a lot of innovation in being able to do that. You have to see the clarity in the mess. Oftentimes, you have to challenge the how things are always done in that industry. You have to be able to think differently about your business processes and what's possible to bring your product or service to market. So I came across one of these businesses, Printfly, custom shirts. You probably know their brands, rushordertees.com or college.inc. Custom anything is complex, but their president, Rob Levine, has found a way to streamline it. He's a serial entrepreneur with an investment background, and he joined Printfly in 2016 to design and implement new business strategies. And since then, Printfly has seen substantial annual growth under his leadership. So I wanted to talk to Rob about how you do that, how you make something simple, how you strip away complexity in your work. Because frankly, it's frustrating, isn't it? Also, I wanted to talk to him about how do you scale while keeping personalization in the business? Well, that's what we did. So let's listen in. Rob, thank you so much for joining me today.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start by getting to know you. What is one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Surprise. So I think the one thing people would be surprised is that I compete in jiu-jitsu tournaments.
Do you still do that?
I still do that. Yes.
Okay, so I have to ask, how did you get into it? And then what do you have to do to continue that training?
I got into it about 2.5 years ago, really just looking for another outlet for my energy, and not to keep taking it out in the gym. So somebody introduced me to it. I used to box a long time ago, and I got tired of getting punched in the face by 18-year-olds. So I decided to do something that was a bit more my speed. And I loved it. So what do I have to do to continue? It takes a lot of training. It takes a lot of getting beat up on the weekends. But it's a lot of fun. And there's a lot of things that as we go through that I've taken from that experience that, it's true. You can learn something from everywhere. And we've actually applied some of the things that I learned in that gym to this business today.
All right. So I want to dig into that, what you just said in a second, but I just have to tell you that I'm over here smiling because your comment about like somewhere else to, focus all that energy you have. I am a CrossFit addict for, I think, pretty much the same reason. I need another outlet for all that energy that I have. And it's funny that you say that because we're in the middle of the CrossFit Open right now, which is 5 weeks of competition. Hundreds of thousands of people across the globe do it. And I oftentimes go back into work on Monday with bruises on my shoulders, whatever, from where weights kind of like came, crashing down on me. Do you ever walk in on Monday mornings with a big old black eye or like, big old bruise?
Oh, yeah. I've come in here with, big fat lips and black eyes
That's
and
awesome.
Broken ribs and all kinds of things. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Before I dig into Printfly, though, you had said something that I actually think is really important. You had said there's a lot of lessons that you learned in jiu-jitsu that actually apply to business and life. Give me one of them, because I feel the same way about CrossFit. It's actually helped my business in a big way.
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing that you take away from any of these challenges, and so I actually did CrossFit for about 2 years.
So you get it.
I get it as training. And to me, it was great. And I got into, great physical shape, but I like the competition against other people or that I get from jiu-jitsu. And, one of the things you do, so I don't know how long you've been doing CrossFit, but, it's really interesting because I didn't come to jiu-jitsu till late. I'm 47 years old.
Me too.
So,
yeah.
I came to it, in my early 40s. And it is a humbling experience, right? So yeah. I was at the top of my game, you know, from a business perspective. I had started and sold several companies, and I was running a big fund, and I was doing a lot of stuff. And I walk into this gym, and I was the, you know, you're the amateur. You're at the very, very bottom again, and you have to learn. You have to earn your way up. Nobody really cared outside of the gym how successful you were.
That's right.
You had to go prove yourself in that environment. And so, you know, jiu-jitsu is a very interesting thing because, you know, it is, it's a very cerebral pursuit. It doesn't look like it when you're on the ground, but, when you're there, it is, it's sort of like, you know, it's like physical chess, right? So you have to learn very quickly that it's not all about strength. It's about angles. It's about, positioning. It is about setting up the next move and the next move and the next move, and how you do that while somebody's trying to, you know, break your arm or choke you or make you unconscious. So it's a very different, you know, it's a very different thing. And so, you know, if you want one thing that actually that's been implemented here that we took away is that our gym, and this is it's something that I think other gyms use too, is and I think that there's some CrossFit gyms that could benefit from this, especially the way when I went, you know, when I was there, is we use this thing in the gym called plus minus equal. I don't know if you've ever heard that.
No, go on.
So plus minus equal is in the gym, and when you train, and think about this as it might relate to CrossFit, is there's a cohort of people that you start with, and that's kind of like, you know, you're all equal when you come into the gym. You're all at the same level. You all start together and you sort of progress, you know, generally you progress, you know, together, you're at the same pace if you're there every day. As you progress, you always want to train with somebody who is better than you. So that would be plus. You always want to, and then we're always responsible for training somebody who is more junior than us, right? So that would be the minus. So every day you want to be training with somebody who is your equal. And if you just train with people who are your equal, you'll never get any better. You'll just get as good as they are. So you always want to be training against somebody who is better than you. And then in our gym, you are required after a certain amount of time, after you've gotten a certain level of proficiency, to take on somebody else and teach them. Right. So, as you know, it's sort of Richard Feynman's famous thing is, you know, to learn anything really well, you try teaching it to somebody else. Right. So really to be able to learn something and be able to employ it, you want to be able to teach it to someone else. So our setup in the gym is such that you have somebody that you are always mentoring, and that's somebody who is always mentoring you. So
that's great.
And we do that here in, you know, in the business, especially in our production facility, where we have expert screen printers who take on, you know, more junior screen printers, and they're always teaching them. And those expert screen printers are always looking to what we call a master screen printer, or somebody who's even higher up than them, and always learning from them. So that's just one thing from the gym, that concept of plus minus equal, that I think has really benefited the business.
You know, Rob, I love what you're saying. And I know I kind of got us off on a tangent, and maybe we'll do a whole nother show of like what jiu-jitsu and CrossFit has taught us in life and business. And I'm sure that's out there somewhere already, actually. What I love about what you are just talking about that I want launch readers to hear is I think great leaders, and you just really nail this. One of the things that people like you are really good at is actually taking those outside lessons and applying them to business. I think oftentimes we get really myopic in our view of like, this is business and that's my personal life. But there's all these great lessons kind of when your eyes are wide open. So let's transition and dig into that. I think for context, because we've hinted at Printfly and what you do, but let's tell listeners what that is and then how you got involved.
Sure. So at its core, you know, Printfly is the platform for customizing apparel online. So we allow people to bring life to their creativity, and do so through, you know, the design process where, you know, you can create pretty much any piece of apparel or hard goods through our online stores to express your creativity. How I got involved in that is I was a serial entrepreneur. I started and sold a few businesses when I was younger. And then transitioned from, and those were in financial services and healthcare. So a little bit different than the e-commerce apparel business that we're here today. But again, you know, like you said, you know, business is business. And at the end of the day, if there's a need and there is a value that's being provided to meet that need, then, you know, that's what business is all about. And Printfly does that, and it does it in a very unique way, which I'm sure we'll talk more about as we go through the interview. The way I got involved was I was running a private investment fund for a family. It's called a family office, but I was running their fund and doing a lot of investing for them in private businesses and working through that with other families who had similar situations where they had or were making investments in private companies away from their core businesses. And I got introduced to the family that owns this business, which is the Nemiroff family. We could talk about how they started this company, but they had, they had grown it to a certain point, and they started to run into some of the typical challenges that you get in a business as it starts to scale. And I worked with them as a consultant to help them sort of look at the business strategy. What did they want to do with the business? Where was it headed? What were their options? And very quickly just fell in love with the industry the opportunity that was here. And through that consulting engagement with them, they asked me to come on and sort of take the plan that we had sketched out together and put it into practice. It was a perfect timing for me. I was really looking to get back into an operating role and build something. And as maybe your listeners are aware, like if you're an entrepreneur, you really need to love the thing that you're going to go after. Yeah. There's this, you know, sort of survivor bias that everybody sees of just the businesses that succeeded. But it doesn't matter if you've done it before successfully. Anytime that you're going to start a business or get back into business, it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of late nights. It's a lot of sacrifices. And you really have to love what you're going to do. And I hadn't found that thing on my own. I wasn't really ready to, you know, sort of put all of my chips down and do my own startup again. But when this opportunity came by, and I really wanted to get back into the operating side and you know, not leave, but sort of transition from the investing side, this just seemed like the, you know, a ready-made place for me to go and do that.
So here's my question about it, because, you know, you're in a very cluttered category, which I would argue most of us are these days. You know, cost mm-hmm. of entry for business is so low, which on one hand is great. On the other hand, it means that everybody can do it. So, and I think printing on apparel, there's a lot of options out there. But you guys have done a really good job of kind of putting a stake in the ground and being differentiated and actually growing the business. And I'm curious how you've done that, because I think it's very easy when you have a production business of any kind to get commoditized and, you know, stuck into the price game really fast. And you guys seem to elevate above that.
Yeah, you're right. And it's interesting. So when I came to the business initially, I looked at it from, I don't know, very, very naive perspective, right? I looked at it as I've done, you know, investments in, I've built businesses in financial services and healthcare, and I've invested in businesses and, you know, all over the globe, you know, that were, you know, in air quotes, sophisticated businesses. I mean, how hard can this be? We're printing T-shirts, right? I mean, it's not that difficult. And then you get in and you recognize all the complexity that is involved in, you know, in custom apparel. And I think that's where a lot of people sort of miss the mark, right? They think it's that old saying, and it just, you know, they just finished. It's like everything looks so easy after the Olympics, right?
Right.
After you see, right, when, like, not to make the whole podcast about, you know,
sports,
but when you look at, you know, CrossFit athletes, and you look at these guys who are at the top of their game, you're like, oh, that looks so easy. And then you get in the gym and you try it and you realize, yeah, holy
it
cow.
It is not easy.
And from what I hear, this open workout from the last weekend was particularly difficult.
Yeah, it was soul crushing.
I hear, and so you look at that and you go, yeah, it's so easy, right?
Right.
How many people you know, use the same analogy. It's like, how many people start CrossFit and how many people actually make it to the games? I mean, it's a very small number of people who really are dedicated to understanding and putting in the reps to get to that point. And I think that's part of the I think that's part of the unique qualities that Printfly brings to the table is, you know, it is very easy to sort of launch this business. I was talking to somebody this morning and I just said, like, you and me, we could sit down and with our skills and with what the tools that are out there, we could have a website up in an hour and we could be in the custom printing quote
right,
business.
Which I think a lot do, right? It's, they're more like the shell
exactly
than they are the actual production house.
Exactly. And what happens is they only own a small piece of that process. They don't own the whole thing and they don't realize how complicated the business really is. And so even in my time in working with Printfly, which is, you know, just under 2 years now, I've seen companies start and fold in just that 20-month period that I've been here. So it is a lot harder than people think. It's very easy to get in. It's very hard to survive. And it's very hard to survive and get to the scale that we've gotten to. And I think that, you know, part of that comes from, one, an absolutely obsessive focus on the customer and the front end. And then two is, we own the entire supply chain from beginning to end. We are a technology company that happens to have, you know, a printing production facility here. And owning that entire supply chain, I think, is a key differentiator because we're not just taking an order and putting it to some drop shipper or putting it to some, you know, some printing outlet that's, you know, could be in the U.S. but could not be in the U.S. and just, you know, hoping that it gets to the end customer and it looks good.
So how do you, and this might be a naive question, but how do you communicate then that difference to your customers? What is it that you do to bring that differentiation to market so that when I'm online, you know, scrolling through all my different options, I know, oh my gosh, Printfly is different.
There's a couple of ways that we do that. I mean, one is just our longevity, right? So when people recognize that the company's been around for 15 years and the company has, dealt with hundreds of thousands of customers and printed tens of millions of garments. It gives people a sense of like, we are not just some fly by night, you know, company. But, you know, in addition to that, there are a lot of things that we do where we show that investment. So one of the big differentiators that we have, and one of the things that we are continuing to invest in, and you know, I saw as a strategic advantage to the business when I got here, is we have 50 people in our customer care team that you can talk to. You can pick up the phone. Try finding another e-commerce business that has.
Oh no,
50
I've tried.
Yeah, even find. I mean, we put our. If you go to the Rush Order Tees website, which is one of the brands that we own. The first thing you'll see is above the fold in the header is our phone number. It will tell you how long it takes to get in touch with an individual. You can also chat with somebody live online. So it's in every single thing that we do where if you ever need help along the design process, there's somebody there to help you. And I think just having that kind of a customer focus differentiates ourselves and makes people appreciate or gives them some sense of confidence that we can get this done for you.
So I was just going to say, I was just thinking back. I've ordered, so I looked in preparation for a call. I thought, how many custom tank tops have I ordered in the last year? And it's something like 37. So I have an addiction, a problem, some might say. But what's interesting is when I started to think about it, what I realized is from the customer perspective is every time I hit buy, and I'm usually, by the way, buying for me and a group of people. Like we're doing a competition together, right? So we get our little design and our team name and all that kind of stuff. Is I then send an email out to the gang saying, hey, I've ordered the tanks. We'll see what happens when they come. Like there's always this crapshoot because there's no one to talk to, no one to help me. The websites are a little bit clunky, you know, all and I have gone to many of them. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because what I hear with you're saying is part of that differentiation point is taking the worry out of your customers, you know, their experience.
Absolutely. And that is a conversation that we have on a regular basis. So if you understand how the DNA of the business and the genesis of where this company started, and it was long before I got here, This business started with exactly that perspective, meaning I'm part of it now, yeah. But I wasn't here then. We started this business where taking all of the orders that nobody else wanted, right, and fixing all of the problems that all the other printers created. That was the way the business started. So when you think about that, over 15 years, we've just evolved to with that as our core DNA, right? And that feeling that you had, I just said this to a new employee this morning. We have a process when we bring new employees on of spending 3 days indoctrinating them into the business, which is also a little bit different than any other company that I've ever been part of, you know, to spend that much time explaining to them our vision, our mission, our values, things that are important to us on day one. And our vision is to be the most trusted place where anybody can bring life to creativity. And that word trusted is the word that we chose to deal with that exact feeling that you had, where you press buy or you hang up the phone and you keep your fingers crossed. Yeah. And you have this like, ooh, I hope it's right. I hope it's here on time. I hope they fit. I hope the design comes out. Like all of that stuff, we want you to hang up the phone and be like, they got this. Like I'm comfortable. I know this stuff is going to be here on time. I know it's going to look right. I know it's going to fit right. It's one of the reasons this is a kind of a difficult thing for us to quantify. But just from the research that we're able to do, we have a very, very high reorder rate, which is not the case. The fact that you just said you've been to many of these sites means that you weren't satisfied with any one of them to say, I'm just going to keep going back to that.
And anytime I designed, I usually went to 3 at a time.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. To see which one worked the best in the moment. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Right. So that's the thing where that's also sort of some validation from our side that we have a lot of customers that come back and reorder and reorder and reorder. And, you know, if they're whether it's a business that's so we do a lot of the shirts that you're talking about. So the CrossFit gym that I used to work out at buys all of their shirts from us now. And we're their 9th or 10th printer that they've been through. And they've been with us now for 1.5 years, almost 2 years. And it's just for that reason. And all of the people who work out at that gym and go to these events and buy their shirts for, they just bought a whole bunch of shirts for the open from us because they were doing an event. They don't even think about going anywhere else after they've come to us. And that's kind of what we're after, right? That's where we make the differentiation from exactly what you were saying before, which is being a commodity to being an actual, you know, by adding value. And we don't get pulled into the price category because when people find value in what you do, then they're going to buy on something other than price. And I think that's really important. If it is truly a commodity and if it's just a transaction, then yes, price becomes very, very, very important. But, you know, just like there are Holiday Inn Expresses and Ritz-Carltons, you don't go to the Ritz-Carlton and haggle over price.
Right.
Go there because you want to
have it. Because it's the Ritz-Carlton.
Exactly.
I want to dig into what you were saying about scaling because you've mentioned it just kind of in passing a few times, but I do find that's a big sticking point. I think both for small businesses or, you know, entrepreneurial ventures, but I think also for ideas inside organizations. You know, there's that level for the idea of the small business where it's, you know, in incubation or in startup phase, and then it gets bigger or it dies. There seems to be that just that kind of fork in the road for ideas. What do you think, or what have you experienced as those big sticking points? And then how did you get over them?
So it's a transition, right? So it's shifting gears almost. So if you think about it like driving a car, right? So you can take a car up, you know, to so many RPMs in one gear, but then you got to shift gears or the engine's going to blow up, right? So you have to be able to recognize when it's time to shift gears. And a lot of times when you're scaling a business, you're growing a business, you're not when you're growing a business, when you're starting out, when you're an entrepreneur, when you're young, you're just worried about getting through the next week.
Yeah.
And then you get through the next week and you're like, okay, now we can get through the next month and then we can get through the next quarter. And your eye is always, you know, sort of on those short-term things. You don't ever start a business thinking about what it's going to look like when there's, you know, 250 employees.
Oh,
and
it's
you
too
know,
far off.
It's way too far off. And it's those things that make you really, really successful early on, you know, that sort of that propensity to act and, you know, to get things done and to break things and to, you know, to be able to be very nimble. Those are the exact same things that can, you know, be the things that are your undoing down the road, right? So you have to figure out when it's time to shift gears and be able to make sure that you can shift those gears without losing the essence of what made you what you are, what made you unique, and where that value comes from. So what I see in business is that either they try to scale too soon, which means they put a lot of processes in place and they put a lot of things in place too early, and they sort of snuff out that innovative spirit and that creativity, and it was too early, or they wait too long and they've already sort of gone over the cliff. They're already in the air and they're not able to rebuild the plane, you know, on the way down. So they end up coming, you know, and crashing that thing.
Do you think, and it sounds like it actually is not the case here with Printfly and the founders and the family there, but do you think that sometimes it's the person who's, how do I say this? I'm going to jumble it, but hopefully you'll get what I mean. The person who invented the idea, whatever it is, the business, won't let go of it when it's time to let go. Because I often find that, and I would put myself in this category, I'm a brilliant initiator, but mm-hmm. I'm not a manager or a scaler. I have help for that. And I've had to learn that along the way, the hard way, because I've gotten in my own way 100%. But sometimes it seems like, and again, I think that's true whether you are an entrepreneur or actually inside a company, sometimes you have to let your baby go and let somebody else take it to the next place.
Oh yeah. And I'm guilty of that too. I mean, you know, it isn't like I had a straight line path where, you know, started the company and it was perfectly successful and we sold it and we moved on and it was perfectly successful. I mean, I bring that perspective to this business here, and I've seen all different, you know, iterations of that. And it's very, very hard because it's tough to recognize when you're even in that pattern, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard for you to see that the things that made you successful, that got you, let's say, from 0 to 1, are not the things that are going to get you from 1 to 100. And you just, you know, you don't know any other way to do it. So you continue to fall back on the things that got you from 0 to 1. And that doesn't scale, right? So
yeah.
It's a recognition of that, you know, and, you know, to your credit and to the credit of the people, you know, who I work with every day, they did have that recognition of like, if this is going to get from here to here, we know that we are not the right people to get there. We don't have that skill set. Is it easy? No, it's really, really difficult for, you know, for anybody to make that transition, but that's what it's going to take, right? It's going to take sort of an evolution of the business. And, you know, if you look at evolution, you know, if you go back to, you know, evolution is not, quote, the survival of the fittest, right? Evolution rewards the ability to adapt.
Yeah, right.
That's who survives. It's not the strong that survive. It's the ones that who can adapt that survive. And so over time, you know, your business has to adapt. It has to adapt to markets. It has to adapt to new products. It has to adapt to competitors. But it also has to adapt to a new way of doing things if it is going to be successful going forward.
One of the things you had mentioned is that custom printing is a very complex business. So how do you, just to balance exactly what you just said, how do you balance the complexities of the day-to-day, the things you have to keep, you know, keep moving, keep working, with this eye towards exactly what you just said, innovation, adaptability, changing with the marketplace around you?
Well, look, a company is a, you know, it's a coming together of a lot of people. So, you know, you adapt or you keep an eye on that by hiring really good people who know what they're doing. You give them the runway. So I, you know, people ask me every day, it's like, what is your job or what do you do here? And I'd say it's, you know, it's pretty straightforward. It's I make sure that people know what's expected of them. I make sure that they have the resources that they need to do their job. And I make sure that I get, you know, obstacles out of their way. And if I can do that for people, they'll take care of the complexity of the business every single day, right? You know, it's like Henry Ford famously said, I don't need to know how to do every part of the business. I just need to have good people who do. And that's part of the that's part of the magic here is we've built an amazing team of people who can manage and monitor and execute against that complexity. So that leaves a lot of room for us to then look at, okay, where is the business going? What kind of innovation is available to us? What makes sense? What doesn't make sense when we look at the future? So, you know, we think that there is, you know, this is an interesting time for custom apparel, but for customization in general, because in a world where a short run of products from a manufacturer is 100,000 pieces, mm-hmm. People want to be, they want to express themselves and they want to be unique. And, you know, this is, I can't think of any better way to do it. So, you know, you're a perfect case study in that, right? When you go to your competitions, you want to have your saying on your shirt
right.
that represents your unique
totally.
Expression of whatever it is that you do. And I'll bet you if you look around that gym.
Everybody does.
Everybody does, but it doesn't stop there because you can make your own sneaker design on Nike. You can make your own, bag design. Like everybody wants to have their own unique, put their own unique spin on things and sort of be able to demonstrate their own creativity. And so we're constantly looking at, our goal is to make that, how do we make that faster and easier for everybody to do? So as we look at the future of the business and innovation and where it goes, that is really what we look at is like, can we make it faster and easier and can we make the experience more remarkable and more memorable?
I would love to hear your perspective, just given your, in it day to day, where to kind of two layers to this question about the future. One is where do you think the customization is headed? And then the second part is what's the impact on that for the rest of us? Because, in today's world, you are, no matter what business you're in, you're being compared to everybody else that your customer interacts with. So if I'm your customer, right, I'm comparing you to my CrossFit gym. I'm also comparing you to Zappos because I just bought a dress there. I'm, comparing you to Apple because I use their computer. I'm comparing you to the coffee shop down the street because they know my order as I walk in the door. Like there are no boundaries anymore. So I'm curious that A, where's it headed? And B, how should we think about the impact of that for the rest of us?
Yeah. So, those are all great examples. And, some of them are companies that we look at and say, how can we be more like them in terms of the customer experience? And then we have to pull that back and say, what does that mean to our customers?
Right.
So we look at that and trying to say, like, let's meet the customers where they want, where they are and where they want to interact with us. So not only do we have Rush Order Tees, which is one brand that, really focuses on getting things delivered quickly. So it's some combination of, custom apparel fast. So generally, we're having quick turnaround times. And that's a totally different way to run a business versus another brand that we operate, which is College Inc., which is obviously geared towards a university student, with Greek life and clubs and things like that. And they want to interact with us in a completely different way. Mm. They want different apparel. They have, they're obviously, they're younger and they're not really all that concerned. They still want it quick, but, they're not as concerned as getting it tomorrow or they don't have a deadline or an event generally. They're just looking for some cool custom apparel that, has their sorority letters on it or their school name on it or their club name on it. And then we have, we have other brands that focus on athletes and artists and things like that. So the way that we look at it is there isn't one on the back end, it's all custom apparel, right? And we think that giving people the opportunity to express themselves, and to get their unique ideas out in the world, that's what we enable. In terms of how we do that and what the future looks like, I think it is really understanding how people buy, what they want from us, how to make it faster, easier. And again, going back to how we started the conversation is, and once they hit buy, giving them that sort of that good feeling of like, this is going to be exactly what I want. And I can go on with the rest of my life and I don't have to worry about, is this going to show up on time? Is it going to be of high quality? Is it going to be, everything that I expected?
There's so many layers to what you said, but it just reminded me of, I was recently in a rental car line with a rental company. I usually just take an Uber wherever I'm going, but I had to go pretty far. And the only place that had rental cars was not one where I have a gold or rewards membership. But I was in line and the guys in front of me, one guy turned to the other guy and said, I literally cannot wait for the entire rental car industry to be taken down. And it made me realize, just looping back to bringing back to what you're talking about on custom tees and your business and why Printfly is doing so well, it made me realize that, when I order from these other places that I open up the package holding my breath, hoping to God it's going to be what I want, right? And then when it is, I'm like, oh, thank God. And when it's not, I'm like, meh, damn it. But how many of our customers out there are dealing with the frustrations of our business, but not saying anything? It's just part of it until someone like you comes along and says, hey, I can take that pain, that problem away from you, and that customer shifts. So I think for all of us, to your point about how do customers want to interact with us, engage with us, it is such a great lesson, because I think most people out there, most customers, are not articulating their biggest frustrations, because they just look at it as it's part of doing business with these guys until someone like you comes along.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I agree with them on the rental car industry, by the way.
It's ridiculous.
It needs a fundamental shift. But that is, that is a lesson for sure, that if you're going to, if you look at the rental car business, I mean, it's just an old business. Nobody's gone in there and shaken it up and sort of said, there's a better way to do this. And that's what we look at every single day, is we are very open here. And one of the core values that we aspire to is, that we learn from everyone all the time. So that's something we started off the podcast with, which is, I take lessons from jujitsu or CrossFit or working out and figure out how can those be applied to this business? And, what is Apple doing that works and that we can apply here? And, what is Zappos doing? I think a big mistake that people make is they're going to be the Zappos of.
Right.
Right. Which doesn't work, because the Zappos is.
You can't be.
Yeah, you can't be. They are unique. They do their own thing, and they have their own leadership. And Tony Hsieh is a great guy, and he's built what works for him. But people who are looking to build a differentiated business, part of the thing is they say, I'm going to build a differentiated business by being the Apple of. I'm like, well, just there in that sentence, you have just said you're not going to be differentiated.
Right.
It's going to be the Apple of, right?
Right.
And we see that all the time. So if you're really going to truly build a differentiated business, or you're going to build something that is unique and adds value, you've got to get to that pain point. You've got to get to that, you can't just complain about how bad the rental car industry is or the shoe industry is or whatever it is. You've got to be able to change that. And we do a lot of that with our customers. We're always talking to them. What could we have done better? How could we make it faster or easier? What could we have done that would have made your experience with us, where you'd be even more confident that you're going to get what it is that you ordered from us? And so I think it takes that constant feedback to make sure that you're hitting the mark.
This is so good. So before I ask you my last question, where can people go to learn more and connect with you? And we will make sure to put those rush order tees and all that in the show notes as well, the links.
Yeah, sure. So printfly.com is the parent company. Not a lot there, because it's sort of just it's the platform that powers all the other businesses. They can find us on Facebook. It's at Rush Order Tees, at college.inc, all the regular places.
I really appreciate what you just said about, to say I'm going to be the Zappos of, or the Apple of, I think is really missing the mark on understanding pain and expectations of your customers. I like to look at it as, and maybe you probably have even a better way to look at it, it's more like, what are they doing right that I can learn from? And what are customers now expecting that I need to understand? Because they really changed the game. Zappos is just a great example. And there's a couple others, I think, out there, and probably some small scale ones too, changed the games on what we expected as customers for return policies, for interaction with customer service. It was more about, at least from my perspective, it's more about that than it is about trying to be them.
I agree 100%. They are unique, but there are things that they're doing that can apply to other businesses and don't apply to other, to some. So I think it's distilling the lessons that apply to your business and your customer and what you do. And if they work, great, but you're always going to have to put your own spin on them, right?
Yeah.
You're always going to have to figure out how do they apply to you, rather than just sort of reading them in a book or adopting them and just saying, okay, we're going to come in and we're going to have a, 100% guarantee, no, return policy, and everybody can do whatever. That just doesn't work for every business. But you have to figure out, I think you make an excellent point. If that's now the expectation of that industry, well, how are we going to meet that expectation?
Yeah.
And can we?
Right. Or do we need to do something else? I don't know why this popped into my head, but I was just thinking about, I saw a movie trailer preview this morning, and it said something to the effect of, and I'm botching up what movies it is, but you'll get the point. It was, Lord of the Rings for the next generation, the Star Trek of, C. And I was like, oh my God, that is working so hard and is so bad. It's like saying I'm the Apple of, right? So anytime a movie trailer comes out that says it's the blah, blah, blah of, of whatever, I know it's going to be bad. That's how I look at it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. What's one piece of advice you have for launch readers out there looking to build a differentiated business? Because I truly, when I think, Rob, about what you've done to grow the business and Printfly as a whole, it really is differentiated in a very commoditized market. So what's your advice to launch readers out there trying to achieve that?
I think my one piece of advice to them would be, you know, go where your customers are, find out what their problem is and solve that. And if you do that, then people will see you as different, right?
I love the simplicity in that. And what I heard over and over again in this conversation is, you know, you guys do a really good job, Printfly, and whether it's through Rush Order Tees or the other ones, do a really good job of actually listening to your customers. I mean, isn't that really the best way to figure out what you should do?
Absolutely. We just say, how would you feel if you were a customer? Put yourself on the other side and solve that problem, because I'll bet if we're having that problem, if that person in line is bemoaning how bad the rental car industry
exactly.
is, my guess is somebody else has that problem too.
Oh yeah. And these guys, it's so funny. I will tell you just randomly, I put it on Facebook because I was laughing so hard. I was like, oh my God, this just happened. And I tagged all the major rental cars. None of them have called me for advice, which I'm a little disappointed by, frankly. But what I was laughing about is some people said, oh, I love National for their Emerald program, or I use Enterprise for their rewards program. And I kind of bit back a little bit saying, it's not about the rewards program. These guys had a rewards program. That wasn't their problem. The problem was the archaic system that they had to deal with just to rent a car, period. Like, it was the whole thing, and the whole industry needs to adapt and change. It's not about having a better rewards program, I think, is not enough. I don't know if you find that in your world.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a better rewards program, I mean, it just is, how do we make you a prisoner and chain you to our service?
Right.
that's what it is.
It's a great way to say it.
In my my previous business, I traveled all over the world, and you know, I was a slave to an airline because of
miles, points. Yep.
Yeah. And just like you said, you know, if you don't have some sort of status with an airline, you may as well just take the bus. I mean,
right. it's like steerage in the back.
Yeah. It's not great. So you end up becoming a slave to them. And look, you know, those rewards programs, they're not designed to reward you. They're designed to reward the airline,
exactly.
or they're designed to reward the rental car company. So, you know, when we look at it, it's like, yeah, that's great. It's the same thing that I say to people when we go into these companies and they have a koi pond and a ping pong table and all this other, you know, nice stuff, which is nice, but it's sort of like at a certain point you're overcompensating for something.
For real. Oh my gosh. I can't even tell you. I just went into a potential client's office and the ping pong table was front and center, and then they felt the need to highlight it to me.
Sure.
And in the back of my head, I'm thinking exactly what you just said, going, oh my gosh, this is obviously, there's no innovation happening here. If you think a ping pong table and a beer tap is going to get you that.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are nice things to have. And I'm not anti-ping pong, so don't get me wrong. But those are sort of things that you do after the fact when you've got a really good group of people and they just want an outlet. It's not the thing that's not the first thing you buy and then start recruiting around.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Rob, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much. I really took copious notes for my own business. So, we're going to have
Thanks.
You back to have even more lessons.
Thank you very much. Good luck with the open.
Before you go, Launch Streeters, what's your one takeaway? For me, it actually was around his comment around everything looks so easy after the Olympics. The idea that in business, like in sports, you have to put in the reps. I know that's not new, but it just hit me a little bit. It was a great reminder. And kind of the whole thing around how it's easy to launch a business, but growing it and actually surviving is where the real dedication and work happens. I think all too often, particularly in innovation, we focus on the launching part of it. But in truth, it's not that easy. And as he says, actually, it's easy to get into business, but staying in business is where the rubber meets the road. I think that's true for innovation across the board. It's actually easier to launch the idea than it is to keep the idea going. So for me, that was a little bit of a mindset shift that, you know, now with LaunchStreet that I've gone way beyond launching it, but my mindset is a little bit still there sometimes. I've got to shift my mindset to how do we grow and scale? That's the focus I need to have. So that was big for me. So here's what I want you to do, LaunchStreeters. First, I want you to think about your work. And if your focus matches the stage of work that you're in. And this is absolutely true for intrapreneurs working in organizations and entrepreneurs. Think about what you're tasked to do relative to your mindset that you bring to it. That's the first thing I want you to do. The second thing I want you to do is I want you to open up your podcast listening app, whether that's Stitcher, iTunes, whatever. And I want you to give us a great review. More reviews equal more guests like Rob, and that equals more insights for you. All right, Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.